Hello, everyone in the Place to Be Nation universe, and welcome back to the WWE Reaction Show series here. The first one of 2018, so that means Royal Rumble time. I'm your host, Chris Zellner, and I am joined, as always, by my co-conspirator, my co-host, the Oracle of the WWE, the one, the only, Knoxville's own now, Devin Hales. Devin, you've moved to Knoxville since we've done our last show. You're big time.
I have. I've moved to Knoxville. So I am in Smoky Mountain Wrestling country now. So
yes, you are.
It's been a nice smooth move. It snowed here the first week I was here, which was interesting and fun. It's been a fun few weeks for the move, and it's been a good first weekend of watching wrestling on the television in Knoxville.
There you go. There you go. This has been a hell of a weekend for the New York office, as they would say. That's for sure. But we are not alone this evening. Since it's one of the big shows, you know, we had to have this man on. John Cena is known as Big Match John. But this man right here is known as Big Pod Dylan. Yes, we are joined by the brother of Devin Hales, Dylan Hales. Dylan, welcome back.
Happy to be back on a different location site than Devin here. Now we're about 99 miles away from each other, so no chance of a literal fist fight like there was during the Almost Buried Tanners on the Wrestling Podcast.
So, yeah, that was a very entertaining show.
We'll keep the peace tonight, I think.
Definitely. Yes, we got a lot of great stuff to talk about tonight, because tonight's show was a hell of a fucking show in many ways. And it was a loaded show. I told Devin when I got on the call, I was like, I'm exhausted. That was an exhausting show, but it was exhausting in a good way. So, because we had the 2-hour pre-show, then the 4-hour plus main show. So 6+ hours of WWE entertainment. And the pre-show started with a hell of a match, as we had Kalisto, Gran Metalik, and Lince Dorado going up against Drew Gulak, Jack Gallagher, and TJP. I thought this was a great way of using these guys, especially the Technicos, as I would say here, in the Trios match. The Triple Moonsault spot was awesome, I thought. And I just dug everything involved in the match. Good pre-show match. So, Devin, we'll start off with you. What did you think of the match?
It was a really good opener. The Cruiserweights and 205 Live in general has actually had a pretty solid year this year. There have been some good Gold Dust tags on the show this year. Gran Metalik has had, like, all of his matches have been good this year. TJP, despite him being potentially or arguably problematic, is very good in the ring and has had a very good year. This is just another one of the really good matches that 205 Live has actually had this year. I'm really liking the Lucha Trios face team, there were some cool, fun dive spots. Metalik was awesome in this match. Like I said, he's been awesome all year. Super fun to watch, and even with the weird, silly thing of starting a match at 5:30 when there's 800 people in the building. The 800 that. People that were in the building got into the match.
They did.
So that sounds like faint praise, but the people that were there liked the match and seemed to be into it. So I think it was a victory in terms of getting the crowd involved. The biggest negative was, I guess, just, you know, card placement and they need to kind of figure out a way to maybe put on the first pre-show match at 6 instead of 5:30. But when it comes to these big four, and I guess big five shows now, since Money in the Bank is a big weekend now. But I like this match a good bit.
Dylan, 205 Live is going through a change right now. Their champion is no longer there. He was fired for being an alleged idiot. That's all I'll say about that. And, yeah, he was supposed to face Cedric Alexander on this show. Cedric ended up not even being on the show altogether, so sucks for him. But where do you think 205 Live goes from here, and your thoughts on the match?
I mean, I don't know where they're going to go from here. It feels like this could be an opportunity for a seismic shift that show really, frankly, has needed for quite a while. To me, I know some people felt like Enzo was a boost for the show in the sense that he had personality or whatever, but Devin will tell you, for me, he's an immediate turnoff. I basically quit watching the show altogether as soon as he won the title. And, you know, so I'm happy he's gone as from a fan perspective. But of course, you know, I don't put my being a non-fan of Enzo above the seriousness of his the situation he's in right now. And, you know, that it's bad. You know, he's a piece of shit. And that's all I'll say about that. But the match itself, I thought, was quite good. I really like the idea of putting all the luchadors together as a trio. I like it because it sort of makes them distinct, and it's an homage to obviously the Lucha Libre tradition. I also like it because I think stylistically it plays to the advantages of really, especially Dorada and Metalik. I think Kalisto can kind of go either way, but I think those two, especially in those sort of trio settings, are going to stand out more. Metalik, I think, has sort of quietly had one of the better years so far of anybody in the WWE. I agree with Devin that TJP's also had a really good year. He's a great base for the luchadors, by the way. And I feel like anytime he's in there with a luchador because of his own background, you know, going down to Tijuana shows when he was 15 or whatever. I mean, he's been around that forever, so he knows how to work those guys. So I think it's like a symbiotic relationship that makes everybody look better. So I kind of hope they keep that sort of pairing and that feud going. I think there's some energy there. I do think that the crowds are responding to it, at least some. I mean, which is more than you can say about a lot of the Cruiserweight matches we've seen over the last year. I'll take some over none. I ultimately do feel like the guys that the division needs to be built around are people like Ali and Cedric Alexander, who I think have that sort of transcendent level of charisma in them, even if it's been untapped by the WWE. But all the guys that were in this six-man worked really hard, and I thought it was a real solid opener. It just, you know, like Devin said, it's the problem of all openers on these shows. You're opening for a crowd that's not even in the building yet.
Yeah. But it was better than some of those other ones in the past, for sure, as far as crowd reaction goes. So, and the Philly crowd, for the most part, was strong all night. And it was understandable the times when they weren't, but yeah, really good first match here. All right, second match. Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson against The Revival. Of course, we had the deal on Raw 25 where DX and Scott Hall passed the torch, I guess you would say, to the Balor Club. They all too sweet each other in the ring for the symbolic gesture. Revival come out there, ate all the finishers as expected. And this is playing off of that. And Revival got their heat back. Worked a really solid match, I thought. I dug this a lot. I thought it was very well worked. It was, you know, just classic, you know, Southern style wrestling tag match. And I think the right team won here. The Revival definitely needed to get their heat back. And I really enjoyed this. So, Dylan, what'd you think about the match?
What I would call a simple but good match, in the sense that it was very traditional psychology. It made sense. It was actually probably less cute than some people would expect if you're a longtime Revival fan, because the Revival, even though they're very traditional, I think they're also sort of known for the sort of clever spots. And I really don't think we saw a lot of the cleverness here, other than arguably the finish with the chop block and the way it was set up. But I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, especially for where they were on the show. You know, my big takeaway from this was, and this will be a theme when we get into the meat of the main show itself, I think matches like this sort of expose the flaw of this being such a long show. I get that you want to give the fans their money's worth and give them extra stuff, but as solid as this was, is there any reason whatsoever why this match needed to be on the show? I mean, like, I feel like this match would have been better served as a match on Raw, where you can give the Revival their win back in front of an audience that's more likely to care, that's going to be better filled in to what's going on. It's going to be a thematic and develop on the story that you told last week at Raw 25. So I thought it was a solid little match. I mean, it, definitely an above average quality match, but it also felt like, in the sense of getting a win back for Revival, I don't even know how many people saw this. Like, how many people tuned in early enough to watch this? How many people were even in the building for it? So I don't know how effective it was at that.
Yeah, and if, in all fairness, I bet you they have a rematch on Raw anyway. So we'll probably get them again.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Where, you know, Gallows and Anderson get their win back on that. Because, so, I mean, that's how they do business with these things. But, I mean, I understand your point, and I agree. I think it's got to the point where they do these two-hour pre-shows that they feel the need to have, you know, three matches. Well, I mean, just don't have a two-hour pre-show. And there's your simple answer to the problem. Just have a one-hour pre-show. We don't need 2 hours, especially tonight when there's a lot of bullshit on there. I mean, we had Alondra Blaze, who was belligerent, you know, throughout her whole thing. And we did get the entertaining Ric Flair, though, who I said Ric Flair just does not give a shit anymore. Dudes that came back from death, he doesn't care. He's going to say what he wants to say, fucking what anybody else thinks. So that was entertaining. But, I mean, we just don't need a two-hour pre-show. And this is a perfect example of that. But it was a good match in hindsight. And, Devin, you agree with both of us about the match?
Oh, yeah, it was a good little match. I do think it's unfortunate and honestly sad to see the the building wasn't completely full yet, but to see that the Revival just aren't getting the reactions anymore. Injuries really hurt them, and I don't know how much Raw 25 segment helped them. It hurt them more than it helped them, probably, in terms of getting over and staying over, but they're obviously still a very good tag team. Just by watching that match, and they definitely needed the victory for sure. So yeah, it was a good little match.
Yeah, and they'll be all right. We've seen these things happen where people have their little dry spots, and then all it takes is a little bit of a rub, and they'll get back on the scene. So we'll see what happens with them. Now, our pre-show main event here was a U.S. Open Challenge, U.S. Title Open Challenge, as Bobby Roode has taken that gimmick that others have used and made it his own here. And Dave Meltzer had been saying that this was going to be a huge surprise. Yeah. It was going to be, you know, just this big thing. So people got their hopes up, expecting, a lot of people were expecting Bobby Lashley. And there were other names being floated around that's going to be the opponent here for Bobby Roode. It was Mojo Rawley. And Dave Meltzer said, as the show was going on, that Mojo was not the original opponent for this match. And the person that was supposed to be in the match was moved to the Rumble. So one of the Rumble surprises was supposed to be in this match. So we'll talk about the Rumble later, when we talk about the surprises, and we'll maybe try to figure out who that was supposed to be.
Chris, can I just step on you here? I know you're in a host chair, but can I just say that I don't even believe that, and I just think Dave's full of shit? I just want to say that for the record.
Hey, you know what?
I don't think he has any credible WWE sources at this point, or very few, and I don't believe him.
Well, you know what?
I think he got worked. I don't think he's outright lying. I just think he got worked.
You know what? And his track record recently definitely lends credence to that theory. He has definitely been out to lunch lately on a lot of his WWE stuff. So you have all the right in the world to not believe what he's saying here. I don't blame you one bit. But anyway, we get this match, and the fans definitely was hoping for something else than Mojo. They went out into him. And I mean, Mojo has some good moments. He can have decent matches. This one wasn't it. And no. Rude's not the right guy to be out there trying to carry him either. So, it was okay at best. The finish was botched a little bit. Rude won. Devin, this is just, this whole thing just fell flat.
Yeah, I've liked Mojo's, like, you know, like phone promos where he doesn't have to read from a script and just shoots off the hip like he's an old school wrestler. But he can't work in the ring. He's got to, I just don't think he understands the psychology of professional wrestling when it comes to working an actual match. I mean, he has good explosiveness. He's a good athlete. He has good energy, but he does, I don't think he understands, the other intricacies and details of wrestling very well at all. And he spent too long in the performance center to be this bad when he is this bad at times. I just don't know how much hope he has in terms of being able to have good matches. Now, to be fair, Rude isn't a guy who I would trust to carry many people in the ring. And this was not an abysmal match by any means, but it definitely was a bad match, and it wasn't a good one. It just wasn't a good match.
That's
just kind of how I feel.
Yeah, and Dylan, this match should just been canceled. I mean, they should have just had Rude in the Rumble. I think that would have worked out a whole lot better.
I agree.
To Devin's point real quick on Mojo, and I want to get your thoughts on this. I think Mojo is way better as a babyface worker. I don't think he's a good heel worker, and I think that's the problem. So, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I do think he has a sort of a kinetic energy that translates more easily as a babyface. It's almost like a Hacksaw Jim Duggan level, like, buffoon that is it's easy to cheer for because everybody had, like, that brain-damaged football player they went to high school with who would, like, headbutt lockers and, like, but wasn't really a bully because he was, like, almost too dumb to be a sociopath.
He is a Gronkowski by association.
Sure. So, you know, like, I don't know. Like, I'm not saying the guy has no utility at all. I thought he was pretty well hidden in the tag team, but you're right. This match really shouldn't have happened. It didn't add anything to the show other than time. I feel like if you wanted to have an extra filler match here, why not just do Cedric versus Mustafa Ali again, right? They just had that match that everybody loved on 205 Live.
Yes.
Why not just do that here? I mean, yeah. And you put Rude in the Rumble, you take, you know, and then you can take somebody like a Seth Rollins, for example, out of the Rumble, because even though there were reasons why Jason Jordan wasn't in it, probably injury related reasons, it did feel really weird that they weren't both in that match. That's a separate, we can talk about that later. But
yeah,
to me, this was a waste. I thought it was the worst match on the show. Bobby Roode is like kind of the epitome of a just there guy. He's certainly had some matches I've really liked over the years, but he's not somebody that ever really grabs me. And, you know, Devin's right in the sense that while there are ways in which Bobby Roode is sort of the stereotypical ring general type, he's not the ring general type that's going to be able to bump all over the place to get Mojo over. The finish in this match looked awful. And like you almost got the feeling that Bobby Roode was just like, yeah, we're not doing that again. we're just going home.
He made a business decision, as they would say. There.
Yeah. So he's a 40-something-year-old vet. He's not. We're not going back to that well again. So, but you know, I mean, it wasn't horrific. It just was, no. I think, the weakest thing on the show.
Unnecessary.
There were certainly things on the show that got weaker reactions, which we'll get to. But yeah. I did. This was the weakest match on the show.
Yeah, and Bobby Roode, of course, you know, when your mentor is Terry Taylor, you know, he reminds me a lot of latter day Terry Taylor in a lot of ways. So yeah, it is what it is. But that's the pre-show. Now let's get to the main show. And we open up with one of the most polarizing matches going into this show, as you could get. The handicap match for the WWE Championship. AJ Styles defending against Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. And no, I will not call them what AJ has called them on television lately because I just refuse to. Now, I'm going to say this for this match. The crowd was red hot for this match. They were invested in all these guys. Even if the buildup has been awful in a lot of ways, in my opinion, made SmackDown pretty much unwatchable in a lot of ways in the past few months, and I don't think we're done with this either. And by the way, everything went towards the end, so ugh. But everybody worked hard here. AJ is just an amazing individual. We all know that. He's tremendous. There's no other way around it. Strong match. They got the controversial finish that Owens never tagged in, and Zayn was legal man, and they whined to Shane afterwards, and you know he acted like a dick to him as always. So like I said, this is going to continue. But I'm so glad AJ won, because God forbid we do not need a lay cool of the WWE Championship right here with Kevin and Sammy. So Dylan, I know that you know. You love AJ Styles as much as anybody, and I thought this was one of his strong performances as usual. And your thoughts on the whole match in general?
Look, it just never should have been booked. I mean, this is a match, like this whole program has been so bad that I think this is like, regardless of whether you're high on Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn or even AJ for that matter, I think almost everybody is united in thinking that this is a stupid program. Even the people who think Owens and Zayn are really good heels, which I'm just not a fan of the act at all, to be honest. But even the people that are in that camp, I think, recognize that this program is just awful. And the match definitely was better than I had feared. But the fact that, and you know, Devin and our brother Dustin made this point like earlier today, which is the fact that they made me not give a damn at all about an AJ Styles match of all people.
I know.
I mean, you know how hard that is? Like,
yeah.
Like, it's real hard for me not to care about an AJ match. Like, whatever you think about gender, and I'm not one of these diehard gender guys, I'm just kind of like whatever on them. You know, but I was relatively excited even about those matches, and he's not a guy I'm high on. Like, I was excited when he was wrestling Ty Dillinger on TV in, like, throwaway three-minute matches last year. But I don't know, man.
Like, Here's the thing, Dylan. AJ Owens and Sammy are just bit players in the Shane McMahon Daniel Bryan story. That's what it is. They're these, you know, minor players. They're the puppets.
You're right, but look.
And that sucks.
you're right, and it is bad. And this is Devin's point, and I'm going to steal it anyway because it's my turn.
Yeah.
It's not a coincidence that the show that Kevin Owens is the top heel on has been the worst show for the last 2.5-3 years now. That's not a coincidence, okay? Like, at some point, you have to connect the dots and realize he's not any good at that. Like, find something else that he's good at. Either, like, tweak the character some way. I'm not saying the guy has no value. He's clearly really over with a certain segment of the audience. But then you watch, like, the storytelling element is not where it needs to be with him right now. And it hasn't been for a couple years. Like, they've got to change. And look, the match here was fine. I thought some of the Zayn and style exchanges were actually quite good. Nobody, I think, believed for even a second that AJ was going to lose. I did think they executed a clever finish, and it came across looking very good. And the match was, you know, it was better than I expected. It was a pretty good little match. I liken it to like a good little house show, like BS house show stipulation match. And considering what it could have been, especially if we'd had gotten a bunch of run-ins and other horse crap, which I think there was a chance of, I think you have to say that this was a net positive until you consider the fact that, like you said, it looks like some aspect of this crap is going to continue. And I just can't. I just can't with that. It needs to end.
I agree, mercifully. It needs to be put out of his misery. And Devin, you know, I know you definitely agree. You struggle watching SmackDown every week. But, you know, to the point that Dylan made about Owens' character, I think it's time that they make Owens one of these smart-ass baby faces. I mean, he would get over in that role where you put him against some, you know, dick heel or something like that, make him a smart-ass baby face. Like a Jericho used to be. I mean, there's the template is there for them to run with. So I don't know. They need to do something about it. What do you think? What do you think about it, Devin?
The match was pretty good, actually. I mean, you know, the heat was great. AJ was great. That strike exchange between AJ and Sami Zayn was pretty brutal. AJ specifically was really laying those forearms in. And I also like that Zayn won the match on Tuesday with a Blue Thunder Bomb, so that his Blue Thunder Bomb near fall could be a little bit better than it usually is. So that was another good big plus for the match. This storyline and feud sucks. The annoying part is that the finish obviously shows that it's going to continue to go on, as did the Shane McMahon backstage segment, and as did Sami Zayn's appearance in the Rumble, which we'll get to a little bit later. So it shows that this shit's still going to go on. Still going to continue, which is eye-rolling and annoying. But as far as Kevin Owens as a smart-ass babyface, that would probably be better than him being a smart-ass heel. Because like Dylan said, when he stole my point, whatever show he's on as the top heel, it's the worst show going at the time. So. A character tweak would definitely probably do him wonders in terms of at least from my personal enjoyment. It would probably help Kevin Owens a lot.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on. SmackDown has another match here. They opened up with the first two matches as we had the 2 out of 3 falls match for the SmackDown Tag Championships as the Usos defend against Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin. And man, was this interesting. Very long first fall. Very long first fall, but a great first fall. Both teams just working their asses off. Usos, of course, they're an all-time tag team by now. Everybody knows that. But Gable and Benjamin are starting to get their shit together, and they're getting stronger as a team as we go along. And then we had the Usos winning the first fall. It's okay, you know. Now the heels are going to take the second fall. We'll go to the third fall like we always do. As Lee Corso says, not so fast, my friend. The Usos win the second fall very quickly. After one of the Usos got taken out, the other Uso got a cradle, got the win, shocked the hell out of me because I didn't see that coming. And it was actually... It's a welcome change because that breaks the narrative that we always see in like these 2 out of 3 fall matches where, you know, we always get the split and then we go to the third fall. The fans, I don't think they knew what to think of it either. But I think in their defense, they probably didn't know it was 2 out of 3 fall match to begin with. I'll let Dylan talk about that in a few minutes. But Devin, the Usos are awesome. But it seems like with this deal here with Gable and Benjamin, you know, they've been going at it for a little bit. I'm probably guessing they're going to still go on, but I think the Usos may need to get some new opponents. But what do you think about the whole angle in the match and everything?
I thought this was a really, really good match. You know, the Usos are the GOAT tag team in WWE history. They had another great match on pay-per-view. The first fall was awesome. I really liked and the thing about it is at least for me, I knew it was 2 out of 3 falls. I'm not sure how many people in Philadelphia did, but I bet on some of the near falls in the first fall because knowing that it was 2 out of 3 falls, it made it exciting and interesting. Chad Gable has gotten really good. He does some pretty awesome stuff offensively. He's got the Chaos Theory. He does a fucking rolling capo kick now that he's implemented into his offensive.
Tiger suplex. He broke that.
Yeah, he did that. The Uso didn't get up too well for it, but it still looked pretty good. But yeah, he busted out a tiger suplex, which was awesome. So yeah, Gable's kind of looking really impressive. As of late, and Shelton throwing his brutal knee strikes has been fun lately. So, Yeah, I thought the first fall was awesome, and the second fall was I was a little disappointed just because I was enjoying the match so much. But I do agree that they sort of, you know, they broke from the trope and the formula and had the Usos win in two straight.
Yeah, again, I was like, at the time I tweeted, what the fuck was that? It just caught me off guard, and I'm like, oh, I mean, that is pretty cool that they did stuff like that. And to your point about the first fall and the false finishes, Dylan, I mean, that's the thing about these matches. You know, the first fall normally doesn't go extremely long, so that's why we were biting on the finishes, because we thought anything could have finished the match, you know, finished the fall up, we move on to the next one. So, no, you know, looking back in hindsight, I thought, you know, they did that very well. I know you were a fan of the way they did this here, so expound on that. And where do we go from here with the Usos and Gable and Benjamin?
Well, I think that, you know, if you're going to do a stip, this is kind of like how I felt about the Style Battle tournament, right? This is going to be a weird comparison. But when Gabe Sapolsky relaunched Style Battle last year, and on that first show they had that match with Anthony and Henry and Fred Yehi, and the pacing started, and it was kind of slow, and I might have even told Devin, I can't remember who, I told somebody right away, I was like, I think they're going to go to a 30-minute draw, and they should. Because you need to establish that things like that can happen. And I kind of feel that same way about a 2-out-of-3 falls match. You need to establish sometimes that it could be back-to-back falls. Mm-hmm. And I think a perfect time to do that is when you have a team or an act, in this case happens to be a team, that everybody sort of recognizes, increasingly so, as a dominant act. If you're going to do it, that's the time to do it, you know? And, you know, it's not like Benjamin and Gable were totally punked out because they had such a good showing in the first fall that it's not like they, you know, it wasn't a squash, right? Like, it was still super competitive. No. But it was a definitive Usos win, and they were, you know, they came across as a superior team. I assume that they're going to move them on to the Bludgeon Brothers or something. I mean, I would guess. I don't really know what else you would do with them at this point. I mean, I guess you could continue the feud with Gable and Benjamin, but to me, this feels like, you know, if you lose two straight, I guess they could complain and find a way to try and stretch this out or go uber heel on them and build the, like, a bigger stipulation match that's more violent. But I don't know. I think it's difficult to see. I think the Bludgeon Brothers are like a logical place to go in the grand scheme of things. But it was a good match. But, you know, one thing I do think is worth noting is that this match didn't have no heat, but it didn't have much heat, right? Like, there were moments where the crowd came up, but the crowd was never fully invested. And I think the real thing is the Usos were kind of over. Gable and Benjamin were not over at all. And I think what that tells you is the poverty of the booking on SmackDown is really affecting how some of these mid-card acts are viewed. Because the fans did not give a single damn about those guys, and they were working extremely hard. Now, granted, part of it is just the broader situation. This is the Royal Rumble. You've been promised two Royal Rumble matches. You know, like, you're not here to see the stuff that's kind of filler on the card. I tweeted this out. With the benefit of hindsight, I think the main show should have been the two world title matches and the two Rumble matches, and that's it. If you want to find some other filler segment here to throw in there, here or there, whatever, maybe you could do that. But they really put the tag team title matches in terrible positions on this show. And I think that that's a real disservice to the guys, you know, especially the guys in the Raw match who had to work the Rumble, 3 out of 4 of them, and then turn around to no reaction later on the show. Like, I thought that was I didn't care for it from a labor relations perspective. not that these guys care, I'm sure, but I also didn't care about. I didn't care for it from a storytelling perspective. I just thought it was really lazy, and it created an unnecessary drag on the show. Probably my single biggest criticism of the show was that these matches were even on it.
They kind. I mean, And we'll talk. Well, I'll table that till when we get to that match with the Raw guys. But I think the thing about the Usos is I think still a lot of people just really haven't accepted them as baby faces again, too. And probably especially people that don't watch SmackDown, because there's a group of people that don't watch SmackDown. So they still think the Usos are heels. So they really haven't changed their gimmick at all.
That's true. That's a fair point. You
know? So, and Gable and Benjamin, like you said, not over yet. And I think their breakup is coming. And I think Gable will go babyface. And I think he'll do great in that whole situation. And Bludgeon Brothers, yes, it makes sense. But I've also seen Authors of Pain's name listed as going to SmackDown. We'll see how that goes. All right. Men's Royal Rumble time. The way this show has been promoted, I think it should have been fairly obvious to everybody that the women were going to be the main event. I think they had to do it. They had to close it out with the women, no matter what, even with what happened at the end of the show. I think you have to do it that way. And the Men's Rumble, you know, we've had some interesting ones in recent years. Some have been good. Some have not been so good in ways, especially booking. This one here was, I thought it was one of the best ones we've had in a long time for a lot of reasons. We got some quality surprises here. Hurricane, you know, whatever. Andrade Cien Almas, who shows up, you know, as the NXT champion. It's very successful in one of the greatest matches in the history of not only NXT, but probably WWE altogether, the night before with Johnny Gargano, which was just simply amazing in every way. He shows up as a surprise entrant. Adam Cole, baby, the Hales Brothers' favorite wrestler. He was over as hell in Philadelphia, naturally, so they pop for him. And then the biggest surprise of all, a name that I saw virtually nobody mention as being a possibility for this, and it made me so fucking happy to hear that music. Rey Mysterio back in the WWE ring, and my God, he looked amazing here. And I thought the Rumble storytelling was great. In many ways, of course, fucking Dolph Ziggler was at number 30. That's a whole nother story. Fuck him. He shouldn't even fucking mash a douche. But I thought there was so much good stuff here. We got our normal Kofi elimination tease, which was great. And we got Rusev, who is – they're going to do something. They're going to have to piss and get off the pot with this guy, because this guy is so fucking over right now. And they're going to do something. They got to pull the trigger on him somehow, some way, before it's too fucking late. Because they strike while the iron is hot. This guy's ready. And he looked great in there. And it's everything that was going on. You had all your big names at the end. Reigns, Cena, Nakamura, Balor is your final four. I think it was the perfect final four. I love the visual, though, when it was the six. When Orton was in there, and I'm trying to remember who was the other one. Who was the other one on the other side? It was Balor and Nakamura.
Ray.
No, on the other side, on the Balor and Nakamura side. Oh, Reigns. Balor and Nakamura, yeah. Reigns, Cena, Orton, and Ray. I thought that was awesome. The symbolism there of this is the 2000s against the now era. I thought that was fucking awesome how they did that. And the crowd was so anti-Cena and Reigns. It played perfectly for where they were going booking-wise. Balor went almost an hour as the Iron Man, looked great, you know, doing the stuff he did. Nakamura, this is easily Nakamura's best performance on the main roster, no doubt. Maybe throughout the entire run, he put it out there. He wasn't lazy tonight, folks. And Cena and Reigns were perfect in their jobs here of putting this guy over and looking great and doing so. Nakamura wins. He tells Renee after the match that he wants AJ Styles in a match that I think pretty much everybody had called 6 months ago. It was going to be WrestleMania, and they pulled the trigger on it. So perfect booking that way. So, Dylan, your thoughts on the Men's Royal Rumble?
I liked this match. I did not like it as much as other people, but I think partially that's because this match was very much not the match for me and my particular fandom, if that makes sense. I'm not anti-Nakamura, but I'm not a Nakamura fan, really. Like, you know, I've seen him sleepwalk through too much for me to get excited about him. I mean, I'm sure him and AJ will have a great match, don't get me wrong, but I like, to me, it's a low interest sort of thing. Like, he's fine. I kind of wish he was on Raw just because it would be interesting to see him in an environment that had more energy that was actually written by somebody who was competent. But it is what it is.
Take that, Brian James. Like,
it's Knoxville's own Brian James, Devin.
Yeah, you know, so, yeah, be careful, Devin. That's part of it. Like, there were little things in this that I really didn't like. Obviously I hated Dolph coming out at 30. In hindsight, we should have all seen it coming. I wasn't one of these people who was expecting Daniel Bryan or anything like that. In fact, I think it was obvious when the men's match went on first that there was no way that was happening.
No way in hell he should go in that match.
And I didn't want him to do it anyway. So, like, to me, you know, it wasn't like I was expecting that or anything. So here's the thing. I liked the Ray thing a ton. That got over with me huge. I thought it was a great moment. I thought they honored and respected him very well with that visual at the end. And you know, when he was in there, he was a dominating presence almost. And he was treated as somebody who could win. You know, they were talking about it on commentary. Like, this is a guy who's won before. He's a serious threat, which I did think added to the moment. But then there was little stuff down the stretch. Like, I'm not an Adam Cole guy. And here's the thing. It's not even that I'm like, I hate Adam Cole or whatever. It's just, I really enjoyed his match with Aleister Black from Saturday night, but he doesn't connect with me. And on top of that, I thought he was a really odd choice to even be in the match from NXT, in the sense that, okay, so you've got a heel guy on NXT who got his ass kicked and lost at a brutal match that he's still selling from last night, and he doesn't have a title. Like, I understand the argument of bringing up Almas and Ember Moon, which they also did in the women's match, as these are the top people for the respective brand. I don't really understand the logic of bringing up Cole. I mean, I guess you could say the Pennsylvania connection, but it just, to me, it just felt like a really odd choice of all the people they could have potentially used in that spot. I don't understand why it was him. I mean, if you want to say, well, he got over huge, well, yeah, so would have Hero, so would have a bunch of people. That's not really the point.
Could you imagine Velveteen Dream in that spot?
I just thought it was an odd choice. From a kayfabe perspective, I thought it was an odd choice. I hated the elimination of Almas. Like, I thought they did a great job establishing him as a player in the match. I don't think at any point anybody was suspending their disbelief enough to think this guy really had a chance to win. I do think there may have been a fleeting moment where people might have thought, man, maybe he'll get down to like the last four or five. And you know what? Maybe that would have been too much in all honesty. But I hated that Orton of all people eliminated. It just felt, it's like, to me, Orton's just such a low interest, like, a guy who exists type dude. To me, that was just a turn off. It sucked a lot of the energy out of the match for me, to be honest. Having said that, I loved a lot of the stuff early. I actually liked the way what they did with Baron Corbin early in the match. I thought it was very effective. I thought the Slater gag was legitimately funny. I thought the Elias stuff was really good. And I do think that some of the visual stuff with the final six and then the sort of dynamic with the final four I thought was really, really strong, even if I'm not extremely high on either Balor or Nakamura. I thought it was extremely strong, and that crowd certainly was high on those guys. To me, the biggest takeaway from the match was it was the second straight year where they really utilized – the position of Reigns, and what he actually is for the company in an extremely effective way. And it's like, I don't care if you like Roman Reigns, if you hate him, if you're indifferent to him. I don't care if you think he's a good worker or a bad worker. I honestly don't, right? Like, to me, I mean, I'll argue it on merits if you want to have the argument, but there's no, like, when people are coming into my mentions on Twitter trying to pretend the guy's not over, at that point, you're not a credible human. Like your existence as a human is not serious. Like,
how do you not get how he's not over? Listen to the crowd, how they react. Exactly. That's being over.
He makes this match. If Nakamura's down there with anybody, I mean, you could say if it was him and Cena, maybe, but they went out of their way to have him not take Cena and Reigns out, which I think was critical and very important. But if it was anybody else other than Roman in that last spot, like, suppose Cena wasn't there, okay? Take Cena out of the equation. Who else could possibly have been in that last spot with him where it would have felt the way it was, where you had a clear, like, good versus evil, we really don't want this guy dynamic in that level of energy, especially given how tepid a lot of crowds have been for Nakamura over the last year. Now, you could argue that the Rumble, they were going to be hot for him anyway. That's probably true. But I do think the energy in the building was at a different level because it was Roman and Nakamura. I legitimately do. And I thought they had some great sequences at the end. I thought it was really well put together at the end. So to me, it was good. I absolutely did enjoy it. It's difficult for me to compare, and I'm sure, you know, part of the issue is I was at the last two Rumbles live. And as Devin will attest, to me, the Rumble is the one WWE show of the year you want to go to. It's like,
yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Way more than Mania. It's like not even close, because the drama is just palpable. Like, so this was different, because I was watching it in a completely different setting. So I don't know if it was just partially that I couldn't get as absorbed because of that, or if it's just that I feel so, you know, kind of lukewarm on certain guys that did so well in it, or what. I don't know what it is, but I don't seem to have liked this as much as other people, and I'm fine with that. You know, I did think it was good. I thought it was above average for a Rumble match, but it didn't hit me in the gut the way it did other people.
And that's fair. And some, you know, everybody has who they like, and yeah, you know, you're definitely not one of the highest people in Balor and Nakamura. But I will say this about Nakamura, boy, he sure looked like a different guy when he was in with the Raw guys, didn't he? When he went in there with the SmackDown slugs, you know, at the end there, and boy, I tell you, and Devin, I know you probably will agree with me on this. If that match served any purpose other than, you know, making Nakamura win that match and making him a star, even more of a star, it made me want to see a Roman Reigns Shinsuke Nakamura series of singles matches. I thought they had really solid chemistry against each other there. But that's their first time interacting in the ring. I mean, Roman Reigns, I will never understand why people shit on him as a worker, because he's one of the best workers in that company. It's just amazing to me how people can't get behind him. I just don't understand it. I mean, let that shit go from a few years ago with, you know, Vince pushing him down everybody's throat. That's over, done with. The guy has earned where he's at on merit because he's that fucking good. So get over yourselves. All right, Devin, your thoughts on everything here.
I thought this was a great Rumble. I thought it was it was a really, really, really good one. As far as all the big moments and stuff, like I loved the Heath Slater gag too. I thought it was great that he got to eliminate Sheamus, and that sort of,
that was tremendous.
I mean, it doesn't really pay off, but I mean it sort of does. It sort of plays off the Heath Slater needs to get tough storyline they've been doing on Raw, where he takes all these beatings from people coming down on the ramp, and he finally gets in and he eliminates a star like Sheamus. So there's a little bit of payoff there.
And there's the Sheamus Daniel Bryan WrestleMania thing.
Yeah, there you go. Yep. The Hurricane bit was funny.
CWF Mid-Atlantic TV Champion Hurricane, thank you.
That's right. of course, Rey Mysterio popped me.
I lost my mind.
You know, like my favorite wrestler ever, so I went completely nuts. And he looked like, you know, still one of the best wrestlers in the world.
Absolutely.
Flying around, doing his spots, doing his thing. The Baron Corbin stuff early was a nice little hot angle to get stuff going early. The Elias concert was fun.
Yes.
I popped for Almas too. I didn't like him getting eliminated by Orton. It didn't bother me as much as it did Dillon, but it was a little eye rolling.
Well, I'll tell you real quick why it didn't bother me much at all is because, yeah, Orton is Orton, but Orton is the guy who was the defending champion. It wasn't like he was eliminated by Titus O'Neil. I mean, he was eliminated by Randy Orton.
That's
and true. off a spectacular RKO as well.
That's true.
So, it wasn't fair. Like he was dumped like yesterday's garbage, as a Gorilla Monsoon would say. I mean, he was protected very well in that match.
Oh yeah,
until his elimination.
I think I could be wrong here, because I remember I think I might have predicted the final four on Friday, because I was trying to make predictions and I made one switch. I can't remember if this was the first or second prediction, but I predicted the final four, I think, and it was probably the best final four they've ever done in the Rumble match ever, in terms of the standoffs and the exchanges and the drama and the build. Spots where guys were getting their finishers countered were awesome. Balor countering the Kinshasa with the foot stomp was fucking brutal.
Oh, but killed him! Oh, man!
The spear counter where Roman looked like he basically speared Nakamura's head.
Oh!
And of course, Nakamura eliminating Roman, Cena, the old stars for the new guard, was really, really well done. The Roman Nakamura exchanges, as you said, Chris, were excellent. And I definitely want to see a match between those two down the road. I thought the last 10 to 15 minutes were perfectly booked. And of course, Nakamura got a big pop and big celebration and picked AJ to be his opponent at Mania. In kayfabe terms, things could change. AJ could technically lose the belt on the road to Mania. I doubt it.
They got Fastlane in March.
Yep. So there's always a possibility there. But it looks like it'll be AJ Nakamura, which should be a great match. Nakamura tries hard on the big show, so I expect something good out of that. I really like this Rumble a lot.
Absolutely.
It was a great match.
Yes, but we're not done with the Rumbles just yet.
No.
Another one later. But after that hour plus of excitement, yes, there's still more show to go. We have two Raw matches. The Raw Tag Team title match, we have Seth Rollins, who was in the Rumble, eliminated by Roman Reigns, wearing his tribute to Stevie Ray and Booker T circa 1995 WCW tights, and a little bit of hot stuff Eddie Gilbert as well. Team with Jason Jordan, who is kind of legit injured right now, going against Sheamus and Cesaro, who are both also in the Rumble. Sheamus, as was mentioned, and Cesaro, who, while he was in there, looked amazing as usual. For Raw Tag Titles, and this was the epitome of what you would call a death spot. And it's tough for these guys because, you know, these guys have had some great matches lately on Raw and on the Raw pay-per-views. And it just, it was like a fart in church, you know, to the fans. Fans didn't give a shit. The Bar wins the belts back. Four-time champions now. Amazing. But the story here, of course, is Rollins was getting beat on through the entire match. Jason Jordan was selling a concussion on the floor. And then Jason comes back in the ring. Tags in, stands there, sells, tags out. He's no Johnny Gargano with his selling of a concussion, that's for sure. But who is? But, Rollins gets beat. Bar, like I said, champions again. Devin, thoughts on the match and the angle here with Jason Jordan?
I mean, this match, out of any of the undercard matches, that weren't the two main title matches. This felt like the match that seemed like the least necessary. I mean, for one, if Jason Jordan isn't healthy enough to compete, then there's no reason to have this match. And two, there's no reason to have this match when you work it like the fucking second handicap match of the night. I mean, obviously three, it's in death slot, which sucks. Because, the three guys who worked the match did work very hard, and it was a pretty decent, well-worked match. But, I mean, like I said, it was basically the second handicap match of the night, and Jason Jordan clearly is hurt in some way, shape, or form and can't wrestle or is very limited in what he can do. I just felt like this was an unnecessary match and probably a match that was better fit for Raw, even more so than the Club and Revival tag. Like, this match just didn't seem necessary at all, especially when you have three of the four guys in the Rumble match, too. I mean, it just seemed like a waste of time. It seemed like filler. I don't want to sound way too negative because the match was well worked, but it was a match that did, that probably could have been done on television rather than on this show. And of course it had no crowd response or heat at all. People just, were emotionally and worn out of watching the men's Rumble. So this is on and no one gives a shit. And yeah, it was just unnecessary.
Yeah, the way they could have went about this, and Dylan, I want to get your take on this. You had these guys in the Rumble anyway, the three to four guys. Why not put fucking Jordan in there at number 30 instead of Dolph? Watch the crowd just completely lose their minds because they're going to think, oh, shit, here's Jason Jordan at number 30. He's going to fucking win this thing. The crowd's venom would have been amazing for him in that spot, and I think it's a missed opportunity. Instead, we got fucking Dolph Ziggler, which I got to talk about that real quick. I mean, you bring him in as number 30, big surprise, and then you come in there, and then he's eliminated not too long after that. So why even do it? So put Jordan in that spot, watch the crowd just lose their minds, then let him get eliminated quickly to protect him, and the crowd go crazy. So that's your way of getting around this match, and then we save from having to deal with this match. So what do you think, Dylan?
I mean, this match was really depressing, honestly. Cesaro worked super hard for like the brief period of time that he was in that Rumble match. And,
I know.
And he's so good. And it's like, I don't want to say this match was bad. Like, Rollins was working light as a feather in this match. I mean, his offense in this match was less convincing than a Holocaust denier's arguments. I mean, it was just absolutely pathetic. Like, virtually no contact. And the thing is, when you're in there with somebody like a Cesaro or Sheamus who are such like high impact, you can't get away with that shit, man. Like, I'm sorry. Like, and here's the thing. I've actually kind of been, and Devin will vouch for me on this, I've kind of been more favorable toward Rollins over the last certainly 8 or 9 months. But this was one of the weaker Rollins offensive performances I've seen in the last year.
And I think he mailed it in. I think he knew that he didn't care about this match. He mailed it in.
And I guess you can't really blame him. They were put in a terrible position. He'd already worked the Rumble. Yeah, this match shouldn't have happened. It certainly was not necessary for the show. And it didn't help the show. The show went over 15 minutes anyway, which was probably about the whole length of time of this damn match. Just cut it. You don't need it.
Add the time to the Rumble matches if you want to add a little time, do it.
Yeah, I can't condone what we saw here. Bad waste of time. I wasn't like offended by the concussion angle stuff or whatever like some people were. You could argue.
I don't get that either.
You could argue whether that's smart to do or not, but what I didn't find it like horrifyingly unsettling. I mean, this is wrestling. Guys are going to sell. I mean, literally some of the same people who were complaining about that tonight were praising Johnny Gargano's selling from Saturday night, which was certainly implied concussion at times.
Oh,
so
yes.
Like I you can't have it both ways. Sorry. But it just shouldn't have been on the show.
I absolutely agree. Now, a match that should have been on the show, and Boy, what a match this was. Three-way for the Universal Heavyweight title. Brock Lesnar defending against Braun Strowman and Kane. And this was about what we should have expected here. It was a match full of plunder, a match full of stiff strikes, especially on the Brock and Braun side of things. And Dylan had a good point on Twitter that I want him to talk about in this match, because it makes a lot of sense. But Brock beats Kane in a finish that was probably the best finish they could do if they weren't going to put the strap on Braun. One day it's going to happen. They're going to give him the title. One day it's coming. But it didn't happen here. At least he was protected and not having to do the honors for Brock. But, man, that early part of the match with Braun and Brock, they weren't holding nothing back there, Dylan. And you had a theory on that. You think that they don't like each other, huh?
I think it's pretty clear that they don't like each other. I mean, look, I think that there's ample reason to believe that Brock Lesnar sees Braun as a threat to his spot.
Oh, absolutely.
And as he should, because Braun is, you know, probably cost about 1/7 what Brock cost. And Frank works harder and is much younger and is just as over, if not more over at this point. And, you know, so, and can work a regular schedule. So he probably has good reason to feel that way. And there were several times in this match where it appeared that these two guys were taking liberties, as they say. I mean, potato shot knees and punches, Brock dumping the entire table on his face. I mean, this had an aura of unprofessionalism that, you know, rivals Finlay versus Lorenzo or whatever that game.
I'm so glad Lorenzo got name dropped here.
This is definitely a higher stakes version of that. Look, I was shocked how long this went. Not that it went super long, but I figured this was going to go 5 or 6 minutes. And I think they went more like 10 or 11 or maybe more, even more than that. But it worked.
Brown got back into it.
I don't think anybody thought this was going to be a classic. But for what it needed to be, were there some awkward moments, including Kane taking the most ginger table bump I've ever seen in my life? Yes, there were. Okay. But by and large, the match was effective at protecting Brock, or Braun rather, without hurting Brock's, you know, needed and claim to be the rightful champion. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't feel like Brock stole the match necessarily, but it also didn't feel like he really beat the guy who mattered. And that's ultimately the result that they needed. Braun's aura and offense in this match was really impressive. You know, I think the biggest thing that hurt this match was that I don't believe anybody thought for even 1 second that anybody other than Brock was going to win. So you had this situation where if the crowd and the people watching at home had bought at all whatsoever that anybody else could have won, I think that our perception of this might be better. But because it was such a foregone conclusion, this was just kind of like, oh, pretty fun little hoss sprint, as opposed to like a really kind of overachieving title match.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Kane, of course, was the third wheel in this whole deal. But I guess it was necessary for what they were doing. And I did love at the end how Braun got back in the ring and yelled, "You didn't beat me!" yelling at Brock as Brock was smirking on his way out. But, Devin, this was interesting. And this is another classic in the series of Brock and Braun. Who, I mean, their interactions have been something else. And, again, this is another one on the list. So, what do you think about the match here?
Yeah, this was a super fun match. Brock and Braun having a shoot fight was pretty fun. Braun throwing his knee as hard as he could into Brock's face, and Brock getting mad and shoot punching him, and then later, Braun giving another receipt when he no-sold the chair shot and literally gave a fucking Vader style to Cactus Jack, meat hook clothesline to Brock's face was also another highlight.
I tell you, a spot that I love was when Braun pulled Brock off of Kane and like threw him like that German suplex spot where Booker T even popped for that. He said, "My goodness."
Yeah, those exchanges were a lot of fun. I mean, you know, Kane works about as safe as you could possibly be, and you know,
be careful. He's about to be your mayor.
That's right. Lots of Knoxville references tonight. I mean, you know, right guy got pinned. Braun looked strong at the end. Pretty predictable, but still super fun, and I think exceeded expectations some. So it was a win.
I tell you, I hope to be as happy as Corey Graves is calling Braun Strowman matches. He's like overjoyed when he calls Braun Strowman matches. I just love his enthusiasm for everything that Braun does. It definitely adds to it that he's like that on those matches. And I'm definitely curious to see if they put them in a singles match at Chamber or put them both in the Chamber. That's gonna be interesting to see how they play that one out. Because if Reigns wins the Chamber, then it's not gonna be a title match. So. But if you have Brock and Braun, I mean, are you going to do Brock and Braun? I don't know. So it's going to be interesting to see where they go in that direction for Elimination Chamber. All right. Main event time. Women's Royal Rumble. I saw a lot of people losing their minds going into this weekend about Stephanie McMahon. The poster come out with her on it. And people just be, oh my gosh, she's going to come in and win the whole thing. I thought it was fairly obvious going in that she wasn't going to be part of the thing. And then they said that she was going to be announcing before the show. And you just look the way she dressed. There was no way in hell she was going to get involved in a match wearing what she was wearing with that low-cut top. So I think people were just losing their minds for no reason there. Now, of course, the person we had show up at the end, I thought would have been somebody who was going to win the Rumble. And a lot of other people did, too. She was betting favorite, Ronda Rousey. Going in, and I think that they made the right decision by not having her involved in the match. I think it worked out better for them that way. They played it smart, and it was more effective what happened later. But anyway, to the match itself, Sasha and Becky starting out, I think, was the right move. I mean, they're two of the best workers. And, of course, this match, I think the main reason why the men's match didn't have as many surprises is because this one was going to have them all. Because you had Tori Wilson, Jacqueline, Beth Phoenix, Molly Holly, Kelly, Trish, the Bellas. I mean, you had Michelle McCool. You had all these people that were coming in from past generations and getting involved. And it was great to see all them interact with each other because – and some of those generations, especially the Michelle McCool, Kelly generation, I mean, that was during the John Laurinaitis period where, you know, the Divas Champion matches were always in the death spot of the show and they only gave them 3 minutes to work. And, you know, girls like Michelle McCool and Kelly who could work at one point in time in their lives and have good matches didn't have that luxury that the women do now. So it was good to see them involved. Tori Wilson being this surprised me a lot, actually. And because, God, you got to think about it. It was 19 years ago when she made her debut on WCW television. 19 years ago. So she looked great, though. All of them looked great. Molly Holly, for God's sake, did her somersault on the top row.
That was nuts.
I mean, Jesus. And Beth Phoenix, you know. Who, I mean, yes, she was awesome before, but she's been out. She's had kids. Picking up Nia Jax on her shoulders. Yes, she's still strong. And although Lita almost broke her neck again, did that moonsault, God bless her. That was not the wisest move. But I thought the booking on this match was great. I thought it was tremendous. I thought the way that Nia Jax was portrayed in this match was about as good as she's ever been portrayed. And she could probably say she might have been the star of this match overall. in the end. But Asuka was the winner, eliminated Nikki after Nikki eliminated Brie in a surprise. But Sasha's throwing out Trish Stratus. That was a big deal. Sasha throwing out Bayley as well. Sasha went almost an hour in the match. So she got a good run here. And I love this Rumble. I thought they did a tremendous job. There's a complaint, which I'll bring up when I go to Dylan. But, Devin, what'd you think about this?
I thought this was really great. This was super fun, and I think it was a success in terms of the first Women's Rumble. The first few minutes were strong. I think Sasha and Becky were the perfect two people to start out because they're the best workers, and they're the ones you can trust to have a good exchange to start, and they did. I think for the first few minutes there was sort of a lull in terms of the crowd heat. Lita, her entrance picked the heat for the match, got huge after that, and sustained itself afterwards. All of the legends and women from the past were a lot of fun, and most of them looked actually pretty decent. Lita scared me at times. I thought she was awfully sloppy. I never thought Lita was a good wrestler. She almost killed herself in the moonsault. Vicky's comedy spot was amazing.
Oh, Vicky Guerrero, God bless her.
That was a great spot.
Amazing.
Nia was unbelievably great in this match. She was incredible in this match. Her exchanges with Ember Moon were awesome. Her exchange with Beth Phoenix was fucking amazing. Her elimination was really well built too and done. She was the star of the match. Sasha was amazing in the match. She's the best women's wrestler in the history of the company. She was awesome in this match. I liked how she started out as kind of a babyface and then turned into like old NXT Sasha heel at the end when she eliminated Bayley. And then the exchange with Trish was great, and eliminating Trish was awesome. And Sasha attacking Asuka and Sasha literally looked like 2015 NXT Sasha, especially in like the last final seven or eight. She was outstanding. I was a little disappointed with Becky's elimination. I thought it was kind of just a blah elimination. And I wish she was featured a little bit more in the match, but she was good while she was in there.
I did like her ode to Taz outfit tonight.
Yeah,
in Philadelphia.
Yeah. of course, the Bellas got a nice pop. Nikki looked very good again tonight. She looked healthy and good and had a really, really good exchange at the end there with Asuka. I thought Ember Moon was really good in this match, selling her arm.
Yes.
She had an awesome performance. She was great last night and she was great tonight. So she had a great weekend. Ruby Riott took the craziest bump of the night with the military press onto the top of, which I think in a lot of ways might have been worse than taking it onto the floor. She had a solid outing. So there was a lot of good little performances in this. And Michelle McCool had, I think, the most eliminations of the legends. And she surprised me. She had a decent showing though, and I thought they did a decent job. At first, like when the first few legends came out, I thought there was like, oh, they're eliminating all the other ones and all the regular women. But most of the regular women who were in or the current day roster women were kind of the undercarders, and that was a hard thing to do in this match too. Was kind of establishing who they never really had the time or the depth to establish who the undercarders and the jobbers are of the division. But I still think they did a pretty good job of balancing that out and had...
I think the crowd did it for them. Well, I'll talk about that in a second.
when they had the Dana Brooks of the world come in and get eliminated by the kind of the older stars and the top stars and the newer stars of the division that that are here now and work full time get the big eliminations, like Sasha eliminating Trish and stuff like that. Naomi was very good in this match, actually. Her athleticism shined a lot.
She got the Kofi Kingston, John Morrison special.
Yeah, she did. Which is interesting that her and Kofi got the spot. I stole that line from Dylan. He can maybe elaborate that on more if he wants. But
they have something in common.
But that was a cool spot. This was a really really good match, and I thought it was an effective match, and it worked. And like I said, the final four with I thought was a nice, really good. Or I guess the final five was a really great kind of amalgamation of all of the top stars of the last 15 years of the division. You got Trish, who was the star of the star of the 2000s. You had the Bella Twins, who were like the first big crossover stars of this era. You had Sasha Banks, who was the first mega, kind of, holy shit, like top worker, like, women can work just as good as the men, who came out and became a big mega star there. And then, of course, Asuka, who is kind of the dominant, latest, newest star to come from NXT. So it was a really, really good mix of those stars in that final five. And I thought that was great booking. And they did another deal of kind of Nikki and Asuka, where, Nikki, the kind of WWE bred product, versus Asuka, the NXT bred product, in the final moments there. So I thought this was a great match for sure.
Dylan, the crowd told me a couple of stories here. The crowd obviously treated the legends like they were stars more than they treated the current roster women in a lot of ways, other than Asuka and Sasha to a degree. And boy, if you were a wag, wife and girlfriend of somebody, they sure cheered for your significant other in this match. Every one of them. And I don't think that was fair to the women.
I agree.
I didn't like that. I don't know.
It's garbage.
Crowds are crowds. I just didn't like it. But that's a story for that. But what, Dylan? What's your overall thoughts on what we saw here?
Well, I would say that that's total garbage, and that's one of the arguments, by the way, as to why I think you can't. It's the argument of why can't we have Nazis in wrestling? We have them on Breaking Bad. Why couldn't you have a Nazi bad guy? Well, okay, that's in the abstract, I actually agree with that until you realize you can't control your live audience. And that's like, not that I'm suggesting that, you're going to have hundreds of or thousands of Nazis in attendance at the average wrestling show. But my point is you can't. A show like that sort of crap demonstrates why I think we're not to a point where we can do storylines like that in a tasteful way in wrestling, right? Because you can't control the audience, and unfortunately, there's still a lot of morons that think it's like more important to prove that they know something or to be edgy or whatever and chant dumb shit like that. So that was definitely one of the low points of the entire show to me. The only aspect of it I didn't really mind was the yes stuff with Brie Bella, because she had started to use that herself,
Exactly, yeah.
But the rest of it, I hated. The match itself, look, I thought this was clearly the best match on the show. I don't even think it was very close. You could rip things apart about this if you wanted. I know that some people didn't like it and thought it was confusing that there were people falling between the middle rope or sliding under the ropes and ending up on the floor for a while, taking breathers. Okay, I get that. I think that's a fair complaint. Didn't really bother me, but I get why it would bother some people. You could complain that maybe they should have had more NXT women in the match. If I'm being fully honest, do I think they maybe should have had one or two more? Yeah, probably. But do I think it really affected the match? No. And more importantly, I think the story of the match, Devin sort of alluded to this, I tweeted this a little while ago, the story of the match was really trying to kind of, you were looking at the evolution and history of the women's division over the last 15 years.
Absolutely, yes.
That's what they were getting across. This was an opportunity not just for the women who are currently on the roster who've been hard workers and delivered and stepped up to the plate and done all that, but also for the people from the previous era who didn't get chances because both the promotion and the culture was frankly shittier in how they treated women's wrestling. It was it was an opportunity for them to actually come out in a high stakes moment in a main event of a major pay-per-view. You know, I can't remember if it was on this show or where, but I made a bet about whether or not the women would main event WrestleMania, I think, in like the next 5 years or something. And I actually said I thought they would. And, you know,
it may happen this year.
And now, like, after watching the Royal Rumble here, like, you know, when this match started, the crowd was very lukewarm. And I thought, boy, Sasha, if Sasha's not getting a pop, because usually she's probably the safest bet to get an immediate pop based on music. And when she didn't get much of a reaction, I was scared. And whoever laid this out did a really good job, because Lita coming in at five is really when things turned around. The crowd came up to it. They reacted exactly the way you would hope. And they never really lost them after that. I mean, from that point on, they had them. And Kairi Sane was not in for a long time, but she made a huge impact. And in some ways, I think she probably was the most featured performer, in the sense that they basically let her do a bunch of single spots to show what she could do more than anybody else. I thought they did a great job of kind of establishing Ruby Riott as a player without completely putting her at the level of the people who've been in the division longer. So I thought that was a nice touch. I love, you know, I was really excited to see Molly Holly. Love seeing Michelle McCool. She was awesome when she was in there. I thought she did a great job. I feel like, you know, the three contemporary women that they really needed to be stars in this match were Asuka, Nia, and Sasha. And I felt like all of them stepped up. I mean, look, people could say whatever they want about Sasha Banks. I know all the knocks against her. I get it. Like, whatever. The reality is, when the promotion has needed a woman in a high-profile spot time and time again since this women's revolution has started, she has been the person. Not Charlotte Flair. That's a myth. That's just not true. I'm not saying Charlotte hasn't been great. I'm not saying she's not been there with her at times. But if you outline everything, from the takeover main events, to the women doing different stipulation matches that they'd never done, to main eventing pay-per-views, to main eventing Raws, to doing, you know, to now being the first person actually in the Royal Rumble and being the Iron Woman of it, going nearly an hour and sort of carrying the dramatic element of it down the stretch when the match really needed a dramatic pick-me-up at a key moment when it got right down the end. It was Sasha Banks again. So people can say whatever they want about Sasha Banks, but it's awfully funny how she always seems to turn up in these positions. Like,
well, I tell you this, Stephanie McMahon put her over hard on commentary too.
Yeah, throughout, because I mean, she always seems to turn up. And look, is she as good a week to week performer as I would ideally like? No, okay, that's fair, fine. But it has she resonated as much as maybe she could have if she'd been better booked or if she'd had some better performances here and there in certain situations? Probably not. But if I have to pick one woman to deliver in a high-profile setting on that roster right now, I'm picking her even over Asuka. Not that she's not as good a wrestler as Asuka, but you know, she's shown that she can do it. And I thought Asuka looked great here. I thought, the other thing is when they did the face-offs, like, I agree with you in principle, Chris, that in theory the nostalgia acts were more over, but I think a lot of the times it was seeing how the nostalgia acts would play off of the contemporary acts, whether it be Sasha and Trish or
Oscar
and
Bethanaya.
Correct. Like, of course, Mickey and Trish got a huge pop, and that
popped me because I love the crowd. Remembered that.
Sure. So like all of that was great, but I think really it was the intergenerational dynamic. That worked better than anything else, and I think that was the story they were trying to tell anyway. So, you know, I get some of the criticisms. I understand some of the complaints. I like the finish. Some people didn't. They felt like the kick didn't, make enough contact or whatever. And maybe that's true. But in the moment, I liked it because it felt like this simple little thing cost you the match, as opposed to this huge, grandiose effort, which I did not feel like it's necessary when you're sitting on the apron. Frankly, I thought this was. I think I've actually talked myself into thinking that this was actually a great pro wrestling match. Like my initial response was, wow, that was way better than it could have been. They really stepped up. Everybody performed. I mean, somebody like Torrey Wilson, that's probably like the best Torrey Wilson performance ever. she was good in like vignettes and stuff over the years, but when did she carry herself that well as an actual in-ring performer?
Never.
Brie looked really good. Nikki was really good down the stretch. Nia was incredible. I agree that now in many ways Nia might have been the MVP. I would probably still give it to Sasha, but I do agree that it felt like Becky got cheated a little bit in the sense that she was in there for a long time. And while the moment with Ruby eliminating her was well played in the way that they did it, I felt like she probably deserved to be in the mix a little bit longer. And it just feels like they keep waiting to pull the trigger with her. And it's like, God, when are they just going to give her a shot? But all things considered, I don't know that they could have done a much better job with the talent that they had in the position that they had on the show, which was very tough because it was a second Rumble, really a third Rumble if you count the KFC gimmick. And
we talked about that.
That's tough to do. And they kept the crowd. It took them a while to get them. It took them probably close to 10 minutes to get them. But once they got the crowd, they never lost them. And I think they deserved it. And by the way, Trish Stratus, look, I've never been one of these people who buys into the narrative that Trish Stratus was like a genre-changing wrestler. I don't see any evidence to support it. And a lot of diehard women's wrestling fans tell me wrong and tell me I'm wrong, and maybe they're seeing something that I don't see. I went back and watched a lot of it recently, and I don't see it. But as a figure that the fans and a lot of the women in the wrestling business believe in, she is so important. And the spot she had in this match, if it had been anybody else, would have been a catastrophic failure. Everybody wanted Ronda Rousey to be. The crowd was starting to chant Rousey, right? Right about before the buzzer.
She was the betting favorite.
Right before the buzzer went off, they were starting to chant her name. And I'm telling you, Chris, there's like this split second when Trish's music hit where you could feel everybody kind of go, damn. And you wondered, are they going to boo her out of the building like they did with Rey Mysterio at that Rumble a few years ago when it wasn't Daniel Bryan? Are they going to do that? Mm-hmm. And they didn't. They popped for her, and they actually treated her like a suitable legend. And they popped for her big spots from that point forward. And honest to God, how many people could have? I mean, I realize that the Bellas are over, other people are over. Anybody else in that spot would have been a failure. Like, it was the perfect place for her to be. She really is a wonderful ambassador for women's wrestling, regardless of whether I buy the narrative that she was some genre-changing performer. As a symbol, she is extremely important. And I think tonight probably illustrated that better than anything she's done in her entire career, because that would have been instant death for virtually anybody else. And it wasn't because it was Trish Stratus. And she, in many ways, she actually saved the match. So kudos to her, and kudos to whoever laid this out, by the way, because I thought this was a very well laid out Rumble match.
Both Rumbles were, but this one especially, yes. And Trish Trish went out there and she worked her ass off. You know, she looked like that she could still go. You know, and they, you know, Beth did too. I mean, they looked like they could still go. Michelle McCool looked like she could still go. And that's the thing. They weren't out there just for the nostalgia pop. Like, I mean, Mala Holly, same as well. They weren't out there for that nostalgia pop and, you know, resting on their laurels. They went out there and they worked. And they traded with the women. And, yes, this had to be what it was.
Hold on.
Could there have been more NXT women there? Yeah, I mean, if you want to make that argument, you can. But it holds no merit with me because this is a first-time match. This is a match where you had to have that bridge between the old and the new and give those women that have been there in the past, like you said, give them the chance to be in this and interact with the new women. And the new women, I mean, God knows, I'm sure, you know, they were inside just, you know, going crazy because they're working against people they looked up to when they were younger. You know, how often do you have the opportunity to enjoy something like that? So, I mean, I felt that they were, you know, working harder maybe in that regard as well because they were working against their heroes. So it was just, it was a beautiful match
lovely.
In ways.
Let me just say one thing about Molly Holly. She worked the entire, wrestling universe when she said that she said she went on the internet and found out there were rumors that she was in the Rumble match and then claimed she called WWE and asked and they said no. And she said, well, I guess I'm not in it.
Well, there was somebody supposed to be in it.
Yeah, Alicia.
Alicia, yep. Fox, who hurt herself into training for this match today, makes me wonder who her replacement
was. Might have been Molly.
I don't think so. I'm kind of maybe leaning towards Kairi Sane.
Yeah, could be.
I think Ember was going to be in there because I think they were going to have the champion no matter what. So I think Kairi may have been the one that replaced Alicia. I'm curious to see if that comes out on who replaced Alicia Fox in that match. But yeah, it was a masterful job, and Dylan is absolutely correct. Trish saved it in the end because the Rousey stuff had gotten so big online that people were expecting it, and then they got it anyway. As Asuka wins the Rumble, and she's in the ring with Charlotte and Alexa, and then bad reputation hit, and no, Ted DiBiase or Bill Dundee didn't come out, which well would have been funny, but Ronda Rousey comes out wearing her Ode to Roddy Piper t-shirt, leather jacket. Her strut to the ring was hilarious. You could tell that she was having the time of her life. And her pointing to the WrestleMania sign was hilarious as well. You could tell she was having so much fun in there. She goes to shake Asuka's hand. Asuka brushes her off and Asuka away. Then she goes and shakes Steph's hand at ringside, you know, to do that deal. And as this is going on, and Michael Cole is alluding to it as they're going off the air, ESPN reported immediately that Ronda Rousey signed a contract to be a full-time wrestler for WWE. Full-time. Not part-time. Full-time. And as we record this, they have shown her on SportsCenter twice, and there's an interview she did with Ramona Shelburne from the stage after the show. Where, you know, she was talking about her involvement, which I haven't seen, you know, listened to yet because we were recording. But this is exactly what they've wanted. Now they have her in here. And like her or not, she is a tremendous drawing card for them right now. And I got to believe that your WrestleMania main event this year is going to be Ronda Rousey and Charlotte. I'll put money on that right now. There's your WrestleMania main event. That will go on last. I think it kind of has to. Dylan, I mean, what do you think?
I don't know if it'll go on last because I feel like they've invested so much in the build for Brock versus Roman, and I don't know that we'll ever see a build that has been as long developing as that match. I mean, honestly, the roots of that match go back, what, 3 years now? Like, having said that, it wouldn't stun me if they put that match on last. I mean, this whole development is fascinating to me. Like, obviously, we knew Ronda was going to wrestle at least some WWE match. I heard rumor that she was going to be full-time not that long ago. I'm sure you guys have heard similar buzz here and there. And I was kind of skeptical. Yeah. I was kind of skeptical of it just because it's hard to believe, you know, frankly. But I do think that she likes wrestling. I don't know if she loves it. I think that remains to be seen. You know, but I do think she has more interest in it than just a passing celebrity does. Frankly, she probably has more interest in it than Brock Lesnar does, if we're being completely honest.
Well, supposedly her favorite toy as a child was her Hulk Hogan doll.
Sure. I mean, obviously, you know, she's got that LaBelle connection, and you know, it's not like she's never been to a wrestling show before. Like, so this is not the same thing as like a celebrity who's getting in who has no real connection, right? Like, I've seen some people make that point, and it's like, that's not really true. You know, like...
Okay, real quick, Dylan. I found the quote that Rhonda told Ramona Shelburne on ESPN. She said, "This is my life now. This is the first priority of my timeline for the next several years. This is not a smash and grab. This is not a publicity stunt. When I first met Triple H, I told him, there are other things I can do with my time that make way more money, but I won't enjoy nearly as much."
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing that, you know, I mean, I tell you, if you're Shayna Baszler, you got to be wondering what the hell is going on, though. Because like, on the one hand, obviously she's benefited some by the association, but she's proven to be a great performer in her own right. And it makes you wonder what's going to be her position in things, because is there really a place for two people with what is ostensibly going to be the same gimmick plus Sonya Deville, who basically has a variation of this gimmick? But,
well, she's the one I'm worried about.
Like, I don't know. That's going to be interesting to watch. I mean, there's actually a lot of really interesting angles to this. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm overwhelmingly excited about the idea of Ronda in the WWE. I'm not, to be honest. But I'm also not like super down on it. I do think that it is reasonable to be a fan who saw this show tonight and thought, man, that's kind of bullshit. They had her come out after this match in what should have been Asuka's moment, should have been the moment for the, you know, the people that just wrestled this match, which was all about the 15, really arguably 16, 17 years of lineage of women wrestling in WWE. And we get, and then she just shows up and like, we're supposed to care about her more than all the rest of this. And I like, there's an element of me that understands that. Right. But
would have been worse though if she would have won the Rumble.
I totally agree. See, that's the thing. To me, I think it would have been absolutely worse if she had been in the Rumble and won it. Once the decision is made to sign her, I think this is the way you have to do it. And you know, could they have waited to Raw tomorrow night? Maybe. But I kind of feel like the fans wanted it. You know, there's, and actually, I think in a way, Asuka came across looking like more of a star and a badass by refusing to shake her hand than she did by winning the match.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. I agree.
In that sense, you could argue that that was like an extra positive for the winner of the match. So I kind of understand both sides of that argument. I'm more in the camp of, look, this is pro wrestling. This is how stuff is done. You know, is it fair? Maybe not. Was it fair when Piper came out at the end of Halloween Havoc or whenever the hell, you know, just took a spot in WCW and you had all these guys on the undercard busting their ass? Like, no, but, you know, did it do business? Yeah. Did people want to see it? Yeah. Like, I mean, that's kind of the mentality that I have with stuff like this is, you know, wrestling is not a meritocracy. It's a business. And in an ideal universe, it lines up with merit as often as it can. And I think Ronda's going to end up being a pretty good pro wrestler. But for the time being, the WWE would be stupid not to try to cash in on this from a stardom perspective and not try to run with it. And I don't, from my perspective as a fan, my big takeaway from that whole segment at the end was Asuka is not afraid of anybody. And, you know, I feel like that is more important than whether or not Ronda got a slightly bigger stage than some people were comfortable about for her return, or, you know, or I guess you'd say her first official appearance in the WWE.
Well, as we are recording this, and this just broke on the WrestlingObserver.com. So again, this is Dave Meltzer. You know, again, track record kind of spotty lately with WWE. Boy, are we wrong? What was what we thought? The sentence here: the current plan for Ronda Rousey's WWE debut at WrestleMania looks to be a tag match with a partner against Stephanie McMahon and Triple H.
Maybe The Rock. Who knows?
Now, that's the one.
I mean, that was the match that was theoretically set up. I mean, honestly, you know, that wouldn't stun me either. And like again, whether that will happen, I mean, Dave said a lot of stuff or implied a lot of stuff recently that I think proved to be wrong, but we'll see. Like, you know, they certainly teased a confrontation there, and honestly, if she's going to be around long term, I'm not sure that it shouldn't be a match like that, because you know, some people say, oh, that's like a freak show match. Yeah, but do we really want her running through the entire division between now and April? I don't know that I do. I'd almost rather have a slow build to that, and then you can build the stuff like her versus Asuka and her versus Charlotte down the line. I'd ultimately be fine either way, but I'd be fine with that.
And you know what? I kind of and it's probably the best move for right now for Mania to do that. And yeah, you can build to the matches down the road. So. But anyway, if they're going to do that tag match, then that definitely, especially if it's The Rock, I think you have no choice but to have that match go on last, like I said. So, I mean, that's just too many big names involved, but wow. Interesting. And yeah, that contradicts what Mike Johnson said. Mike Johnson is thinking Charlotte and Rouse reported that, and Dave reported the tag match. And there's a picture of Ronda, Stephanie, and Triple H, some all smiles and hugs after the show as well. So, isn't that great? All right. Wow. What a show. What a fucking show. So, time for our final grades here. Dylan, thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle. Where do you stand?
This is actually a weird one. This is a weird one because I feel like if you look at the entirety of the show, you could be like, wow, there's a lot of filler. It was needlessly long. They put some people in really bad positions on the show. You know, the two title matches were kind of afterthoughts that, you know, were better than maybe we thought they would be, but also just kind of seemed inconsequential. And having said that, I think it's easily a thumbs up.
I agree.
In most situations, a show like that would probably be thumbs in the middle at best, but it just feels like it was a fun wrestling show to watch overall, even with dead time, even with some major annoyances, and, you know, even with some controversial stuff and some stuff that, you know, we may look worse 5 years from now than it looked tonight. I think that this was a really good wrestling pay-per-view. And I think, you know, honestly, I was not a fan of doing both the Rumbles on the same show. I'm still not sure that I like the idea long-term. I always sort of thought that the novelty of the first year had a chance to be fine. But I have to say, it worked a lot better than I feared. And they deserve a lot of credit for that. So to me, it's a thumbs up show.
Devin, where do you stand?
I think it was a thumbs up show too. I think they hit all the right notes. You know, of course, the Ronda deal at the end was great there. And you know, I think they hit all the right notes. Nakamura going over Cena and Reigns in the end, and Asuka winning, but not standing down to Ronda. Ronda's return. Brock and AJ retaining seemed like the right ideas to build to Nakamura, AJ, and Brock Roman. So yeah, I think they hit all the right notes. Both Rumble matches were great. Uso's tag was real good. Cruiser's match was real good. So definitely a thumbs up for sure.
I totally agree. This show, the Royal Rumble shows always to me is about the Royal Rumble. That show always has the significance for me because this is my favorite pay per view of the year, even on WrestleMania. I love the Royal Rumble, and if the Rumble is great, then the show is great. I don't care about anything else on the show. And there's been a lot of Royal Rumbles over the years that's had some shitty ass undercards. So, I mean, that's not nothing new. We had two great Royal Rumbles on this show that were great for different reasons, and both were very well laid out. I'm curious to know who actually laid out the Rumbles because they need to get a raise for how they did it. So
definitely wasn't Road Dogg.
Great. Oh God. Okay, watch out now. You're getting close there. The bullet's gonna come find you. So yeah, this is a definite thumbs up show, and it's got, you know, it's one of the shows that leaves you with questions in the balance. You know, like, where we go from here with Rey Mysterio? You know, is he back full time? Where is he? What show will he be on? I love stuff like that. You know, that have some open ended stuff, and it built up what it needed to build up the right way. So, yeah, I think it's a rousing success, no pun intended, for this show. So we'll see what happens. Elimination Chamber as Mania season has now began. All right, Devin, Dylan, thank you both for being on the show, as always. And this is Chris saying so long from the Peach State of Georgia.